everyone, this is Kellen. Just jumping on before the episode begins to, first of all, thank you for listening to our little podcast, and to let you know that these next couple of episodes are all going to be holiday themed, Christmas themed, and so we're going to be talking about all sorts of things, including our family traditions, Santa Claus, other holidays that might be celebrated around this time. Just to let you know, if you plan to listen with your kiddos or on your own or with your little bit older kiddos. So just a little heads up, and here we go into the episode.
Hello and welcome to Old Friends Who've Just Met, a podcast about all things Muppets, and we are starting Christmastide, the Christmas season. I mean, the winter holiday season. Wrong group of children. Although, like, for as much as I love all things Muppet music, right? The only thing that rivals it is Vince Guaraldi and all of the Vince Guaraldi Peanuts music. Like,
how could he do all of that for one 45-minute special?
I mean, you don't question genius. You just marvel at it.
Vince, we're here for you. The rest of it's gravy.
Yes, exactly. So, Kellen, do you want to tell people what we're going to talk about today?
Yes, because this is very special for me.
Very special for you.
We're talking about the Bear in the Big Blue House, the Berry Bear Christmas special, two-parter. Some reason, only part one is on Disney Plus. We had to jump to YouTube for the part two, but this was very exciting for me. Not least because Tutter is my heart Muppet. Like, everybody's got the Muppet that's them. Tutter is me. But also because this was reminding me, I think I said this to you, Jesse. I was texting my family during this because I was like, we watched Sesame Street growing up because, like, what child with a television didn't watch Sesame Street growing up? But, well, except for Jesse, who wasn't allowed. But, like, I was the target age when this show was on the air for this television show. And this, to me, is, like, this is my childhood Muppet show. Like, some people had Muppet Babies. Some had Sesame Street. This was, like, my childhood Muppet show.
Muppet Babies was my childhood Muppet show, right? But I think we should remind people our age difference just because...
Yes.
Like, I do think... Like, I am 42.
I am 26 somehow.
Yes. Like, never forget... We met because I was your professor. But what I, like, was researching, I was like, oh, yeah, this came out in 1999. Like, I had already emancipated, was living alone, was, like, starting, like, in college. It was, of course, this was not on my radar.
I was bipping and bopping on my way to pre-K.
Yeah.
When this came out. And I, like, it's... And it was one, it's like a weird thing of, like, it was so, so important to me as a child. And then something happened and I completely forgot about this show for a very long time. And then a couple years ago, before we started doing this, like, something just popped up, like, on my social media feed or something. And I was like, oh my God. Oh my God, Bear in the Big Blue House. Oh my God. And, like, I just fell down this rabbit hole of, like, all these memories just came, like, flooding back to me.
Sure. That, and like, reclamation of childhood all of a sudden, you know.
With Pip and Pop and Trilo and Luna and Hog. And
I have to say, one of the things I walked away, because this is the first of Bear the Big Blue House that I have seen in totality, not just, like, clips, right? And my image in Kellen's phone is Bear. And, like, years ago you called me Bear and I was like, okay, whatever that means. And now I'm like, that is the highest of high compliments.
This happened right before we started recording the show. We were just, like, talking about, oh, what are we we going to talk about? We're going to talk about, like, what Muppets embody ourselves and what's our favorite, this, that, and the other. And I was like, I am Tutter. Like, I feel so much kinship with Tutter. And then I sent you a clip. I said, I think you need a lot of Bear in the Big Blue House to make it for the deprivation. And then you said to me, am I the bear? And I said, if you feel it's right. And I immediately changed your picture on my phone to bear.
I mean, after watching it, I was like, oh, yeah, I feel like bear energy might be my energy.
You're a little less like, hey, all right. But that's just the nature of being a big furry bear in a big blue house.
Yeah.
You have to stay here. If you're raising a family of mice, bears, and otters, you have to keep yourself here.
You have to keep yourself calm. But I do think, like, maybe if we fuse Fozzie and Bear, if we fuse
100.
That you do arrive at Jesse Oliver.
You are within the bear species of Muppet.
Yes. I'll even argue sometimes Bobo.
My only thing about Tutter is that I can't eat cheese.
I was gonna say,
it hurts my tummy, and also I don't like the smell.
The only thing I clocked was, like, the biggest difference between Tutter and Kellen is just the cheese.
Substitute cheese for potatoes, and you're at me.
That's the most Irish thing you've ever said on this podcast, Kellen.
I need to make up for lost time. My family went without.
You survived that famine, and here we are. Okay, I have to tell you, I was in Chicago recently, and I was staying with my best friend, and this does clock in, like, when I was thinking about Spirit Muppets. Like, I was like, like, here's the thing. My best friend, I'm at her house, right? And she's like, I said, do you have any cheese? And she goes, oh, I don't think I have any. And she walked out with 5 different types of cheese.
What?
Like, she was like,
I don't live that way.
My friend Erin. But, like, she always has, like, I knew she had some. I was like, there's just, like, not a reality in which you do not have cheese in your fridge. And it was, like, a night we had been out and, like, because we went and saw shows all weekend. I'm like, I was like, I just need something. Do you have cheese? And not only did she have, like, 5 types of cheese, she literally created a charcuterie board, like, crafted an incredible charcuterie board at, like, 11 o'clock at night. Like, I was,
oh,
like,
oh my God. I have a block of cheddar that I use to sometimes make a quesadilla when I'm feeling like it. When I can handle it.
But I do think you and she are, like, different parts of Tutter. Like, mm-hmm. Yep. I do think everyone is, like, 2 Muppets combined, right? Like, maybe, like...
Yeah, my Muppet 2 are Tutter and Robin, maybe.
Sure.
I don't know who my second is, if besides
maybe
Tutter.
Beans the Bunny.
Yeah.
But I guess this is a fun game for our listeners to play, too.
Yeah.
Like, what 2 Muppets are you?
Suggestorinos, too.
Yeah. We are curious. We're curious.
Suggestoronies.
Okay. I want to make a wreath of apples and tennis balls. That's how we're going to start this thing off.
Genius. Like, I loved the visual from the opening number of Tutter playing the trumpet in the crook of Bear's arm, because just logistically, that involved a puppeteer going up next to Noel in the costume and sticking his hand, like, through his armpit to do this little bit of whatever was going on. And it's cute as hell.
It's cute as hell.
To sit in your big bear friend's elbow.
I will say, as I was reading about the episode, like, I read a little section about Dave, because I was like, that has, when I heard the dog, mm-hmm. I was like, that has to be Dave. And it was like, Dave has had 3 shoulder surgeries and 2 hip surgeries.
Yes.
And I was like, yeah, of course. Those puppeteers are probably, like, literally mangling their body to do these positions to get them mm-hmm. to work. I was like,
I was reading about Dave today, too.
Oh, wow.
And Peter Linz. I mean, Tutter and Walter being the same person.
I love that Dave got married at 46. It gives me hope.
Had 2 kids and settled on a ranch of 20 acres.
Yes! Maybe I'm just living my best Dave life. Let's hope.
This is unrelated to Muppets, but I sometimes think to myself, I think Parks and Rec was very intelligent in having Leslie and Ben get married in their 30s. Like, sure. They were not in their rush to get anywhere.
Sure.
Like, it wasn't like Friends where it was like, I have to be married by the time I'm 29. It's like, no, people move at different paces.
It's true. It's true. So tennis balls and apples. I mean, yeah, I think that is a wreath I will make somehow this year.
Yeah. It's why for not? The reindeer. They don't get enough of the credit.
It's true. It's true.
I love Pip and Pop was a huge note I wrote. Covered two lines of my page.
That's right.
You're so slinky.
I love that we're covering a myriad of winter holidays. It reminds me of... very Unitarian.
Yes, and I wrote, I think it's very interesting that they did not feature Christmas first when they were singing that song.
Sure.
When, like, they didn't make it super Christmas-centric. I mean, eventually it did because, you know, they celebrated that way in the second part.
It's just, it's intentional, right? Like, like the 90s were not known for being a period of intentionality.
No. And I think, and I mean, we haven't gotten quite to this part yet, but I like the way that they spoke about Jack, the dog.
Yes.
How they, the language that they used around situation, like today.
There's one Tutter moment that I'm like, Tutter. But also Bear is like, Tutter.
Tutter, yeah. I mean, today we would probably have seen use of the, instead of saying Jack is homeless, saying Jack is experiencing unhoused. Homelessness.
Or like is part unhoused. Of the unhoused population.
Yeah, like, I think, it was like a couple years ago the first time, my mom, who's a social worker and had worked with these organizations, I remember very clearly the first time she used person experiencing homelessness instead of homeless person, which is what her career had, like, that was... the language changed within her career field.
Yeah.
And so, like, in the 90s, that was not the language they were using. They were using, like, the best language they could, but they also spoke about it in a very compassionate and intelligent way of, like, sometimes people just, this happens to them.
Yes.
And they're the same as us.
I actually wrote down, it's for one reason or another, and I kind of loved that verbiage around it, because for 1999... to basically decenter the narrative that somehow you did something. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's, that is, I was like, okay, 1999, Bear in the Big Blue House. Mm-hmm.
And it was saying it in a simple way that was not infantilizing or patronizing.
Yes.
That community.
It was very clear that they understood the assignment of still maintaining humanity around the situation.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
I thought it was a really nice way of handling that subplot. And the song afterwards, where Tutter was like, what if I didn't have the big blue house? And Bear was like, well, you know, we'll always be here for you. But Tutter walking around with a little bindle was just, it was like, he's so small. Like, the world is so big, and Tutter is so small.
Tutter's so tiny. Going back to the holiday for everyone and the Unitarian nature of it, do you know the story that when I worked at the college you attended, that I did a Unitarian gig for someone who was in our department, and that the penultimate song for this holiday concert was This Land Is Your Land, and that the final song was We wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Happy Hanukkah, we wish you whatever your heart wishes, and a Happy Solstice. And I was like, what?
That was, I had a note, I was like, they covered everything but the solstice. I kind of wished for a little pagan in there, but that's okay.
I think the Winterberry, like, story is actually the pagan story.
That was their way of doing it.
Yes, because, you know, you have to remember, 90s still had this weird satanic panic around it, right? Like, so you couldn't really say pagan without people being like, witches, right? Like, and...
Witch bear!
Burn the bear! So, you know, I did like that. Winterberry was the form of paganism.
And the Winterberry thing was very fun. Like, there was a lot from this that I also appreciated from, like, European holiday traditions that are not centered around Christmas Day in that traditional way. Like, Tutter putting out his shoes was a St. Nicholas thing, which, like, my family, the German side of my family, did that. Like, we have wooden shoes that we got for Christmas when we were babies that we put out. Would put out in front of our bedroom door, and our parents would put like a little bit of candy and maybe like a pair of socks.
Look at you anticipating a question I was going to ask you. Did you have any like individual like family traditions?
Most of our Christmas traditions, besides the general like the things like we get together as a family kind of stuff, were German, like Central European kind of centric stuff, like the St. Nicholas Day thing. But also on Christmas Day, we have pickle ornaments. And, like, there's the thing of, like, looking for the pickle in the tree, which I think is kind of an Americanized German thing. I don't know if it's really a traditional German thing. But when they were searching for the Winterberry, I was like, this is just like when we have to look for the pickle on Christmas morning. And we had two ornaments. One was a pickle and one was, I think, a pea pod, so that my brother and I could each find one. And the gift would be, like, our family got a new board game.
Sure.
You know, like, it wasn't a gift for us. But we just have to find it. But then in the last couple of years, my dad has really taken off with it, where instead of the ornaments, he cut them out of construction paper, and he cut one that is huge, like the size of a dinner plate, and hides it somewhere. And then he cut one out that's about the size of a nickel, and he hid it behind ornaments on the tree. And he has a great time with it. One time he hid the pickle in the wreath over the fireplace, and we were like about to cry looking through the tree like, we can't find it.
that's right.
Yeah, but that's like our, like, when they were hunting the Winterberries, like, oh, that would be so fun to do, like, to get kids together, look for the Winterberry. And I was like, it's looking for the pickle. Like, we already have our own version of that, but I think it would be sweet to set that up with, if you have children, to set that up.
We kind of combined, so there's a Swedish holiday called Santa Lucia, right?
Yes.
And I think a lot of Swedish Americans combine Christmas Eve and Santa Lucia into like one amalgamation of a holiday. And so we would set our heads on fire.
Very nice. Very nice. With those tall tapers.
And then have like Potatakorv and Bundost and like very like traditional. Like my mother would make meatballs. And when I say my mother would make meatballs, I mean, there were at least four cast iron skillets going of like what is frying, what is baking at any given time. I still like, I have a visceral memory, and I'm so sorry, Kellen. I think this might end up grossing you out, so I'm just going to warn you.
Okay.
Of like being a child and the assembly line of making meatballs and like my hands going numb from sticking my hand in cold meat, right? To like make the meatball. I know you well. I knew you would not like it. But it's like, yep, you're like,
image of raw meat is like,
yep, I know. But like, for me, it's like such a like a rarity of a nice childhood.
And it's Christmas. And it's holiday.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think, like, if we had other traditions, really. I mean, Christmas Eve was spent with my mom's side of the family, and it was like, the adults had a grab bag, so nobody had to buy a bunch of gifts. And then Mason and I would get gifts from, like, especially when we were little, we would get gifts from, like, all of the grown-ups or whatever. Oh, and we would do, like, those poppers. The...
Like a cracker! Like, the crackers,
cracker,
like,
a holiday
yeah.
cracker, that's yeah. what it is. Like, you pull with someone else. I think it's an English thing, originally. Which, I mean, you know, my mom's side of the family is, like, German, and then all the other European things all kind of thrown together. So, like, it makes sense. But we didn't have a lot of traditions, really. I guess, like, sometimes we would have German-type food, maybe. But the other traditions that we had were not really, like, cultural. It was, like, there was a website where you could, on the NORAD website, you could follow Santa and his sleigh.
Oh, sure.
Which was something we would do after we would come home from, like, the midnight church service or whatever. Or, like, when we were little, the 6 p.m. church, whatever. But, like, little things like that of the usual stuff that you do with kids, which meant that I would, like, watch it and I'd be like, why isn't he, like, why is he in Brazil? It's only, like, an hour till midnight. He's supposed to be here. Like, I could not handle it. And actually, if there are children listening, this might be a time to consider pausing the episode.
Oh, what are you about? I'm curious. Are we talking about, are you saying Santa isn't real, Kellen?
Well, now we hope that you paused by the time that you said that. Because we had so many of those little things of, like, looking at the radar and, like, the food, like, having bites taken out of it the next morning. And then my parents would put boot prints in our our fireplace with them coming out onto the hearth, to the point where, like, I was telling people at school, I was like, no, like, I know he was here because I saw the footprints. And then at some point, like, it started to just, like, tick for me, and I cornered my poor dad in the kitchen. I was like, Dad, you need to tell me the truth right now. And he was like, no, he's real. And I was like, Dad, tell me the truth. And he was, he finally told me, and I felt so bad later.
How old were you?
Somewhere around third, fourth, fifth grade, like that general area. Like, maybe a little old, but definitely in the right realm.
Is this what happens when you have a good childhood? Because, like, for me, it was like, oh, Santa isn't real. You're five. Deal with it. It's just like there was no magic.
Sure. I think it was just as much fun for them as it was for us. Like, they would definitely do the, like, on Christmas Eve when they would be having to wrap presents upstairs, it would be like, why don't you watch a movie with Mom in the living room? I have to go take a work call upstairs in our room where I don't have a computer. Like, like, looking back, it's like, oh, that's what Santa's workshop was.
Sure.
But I mean, I love the fall. I love all the things that have to do with fall, but this is my favorite time of year. I love getting to do stuff with my family, and I love the music, and I love the spirit of everything.
I don't think I have spent Christmas with anyone in my family but once in the last 20 years.
Well, sure.
Sure, yeah. And that's all I'm going to say about that. But, you know, here's one thing I will say. As someone who did not get raised, like, watching Christmas movies, really, or anything like that, it is something I really enjoy as an adult. I will say, being a working musician is a weird thing because you basically start Christmas music in August. Like,
yeah.
Right? Like, people are doing auditions for shows. People are, like, you start, like, putting your hands on Christmas music or, like, walking people through auditions for Christmas shows in August. And, like, it's like, there's this, like, weird period of August to September that I, like, have Christmas on the brain, and then it goes away for Halloween, and then, like, and then second week of November, it starts again. Yeah. So, here we are. Mm-hmm.
And this, well, and, like, last, I guess, non-Muppet story, my generation of cousins, we're all very close, even though there's, like, a million of us. And this would be, like, the time of year besides our family vacation we would get to see each other. And a lot of times we would get to finagle our parents because they would often come back up for New Year's to be like, what if they just stayed here until New Year's and had, like, a Christmas break week-long sleepover,
which
is what every kid wants to have at some point, is, like, just a forever slumber party. What's better than a slumber party that goes on for a week? As a grown-up right now, I'm like, oh my god, no.
I would be like, I need to introvert real hard. So
you need to
sorry.
Give me a day, a day where you're not here. But, like, as a kid, that was like, oh, amazing. We finished our long discussion of our traditions, which that quick Fiddler reference in part two.
There are two Fiddler references in part,
like,
two.
Excuse me? This is amazing.
It happened once, right? Where it's like Fiddler on the Woof. Mm-hmm. And then they sang Tradition, and I was like, two Fiddler references in a row. Mwah, mwah.
I also had a little bit of a question of when Tutter was awake and yawning, which, one, cutest thing in the world is seeing Tutter yawn, but when he was standing on that kitchen table, he was standing in front of, like, a menorah and a dreidel and a stack of presents with, like, that wrapping paper. I was like, is Tutter Jewish?
Well, and it would follow the rule of Blue Muppets being Jewish.
Which, if you guys don't know about that, there's someone on TikTok had a whole working theory of every Blue Muppet being actually coded as Jewish. And it's very much worth looking into.
Yes, but I was like, that is definitely, like, I was like, I believe Tutter is probably Jewish. I also believe, okay, so I'm a big fan of Lauren Bouchard, right? Like, all of the stuff he does. So, like, Bob's Burgers and, you know, Great North and Central Park and all that. And there are two things that, like, really struck me in this episode. Trilo, Pip, and Pop give me, like, Andy and Ollie and Louise Friends energy. Like, you can tell that, like, they are, there's just too many.
They're the chaos monsters.
Yes. But the other thing is, Luna, in Great North, Judy, the daughter, is, like, goes out onto her roof and talks to the Aurora Borealis, which is Alanis Morissette, as lights in the sky. And I was like, oh, my God, this is Luna. Like, I was like, oh, Lauren Bouchard clearly, clearly somehow watched Bear in the Big Blue House.
I like that it's always a full moon. Wherever, like, wherever they are in the actual lunar cycle, like, Luna will show up in full fig and looking amazing.
She's a full fig moon.
She was played by Lynn Thigpen, who unfortunately passed away in 2003. Aww. But she was a judge on a couple episodes of Law and Order, where when I saw her picture, I was like, hey, wait a minute! I know this lady! And also, she was in the Godspell movie in 1973. And
with
so
Victor
I was like,
Garber.
Yes! I was like, this woman has had a storied career.
A storied career. And it's a lovely voice. Like, I really liked the song. Like,
she is perfect to play the moon. Like, yes. That's exactly who you want. Upscale. Like, I will say, the moon puppet is both beautiful and horrifying at the same time.
It reminds me of these old McDonald's commercials. But I was like,
Mac Tonight, yes.
Yep, I was like, this was an era. It was an era of, like, weird,
scary,
disturbing
moon puppets.
Moon puppets.
It's just that, like, the face is so big. The face is so big on that moon.
I mean, but that's how she shines so brightly. So, you know, sometimes...
It's fine.
You go with it. I really do. I want you to see, I have, is Tutter Jewish, written in my notes. It is a question.
I do too!
I think we have come to the conclusion that the answer is yes. Okay, so did you go watch the shadow scene?
No.
The one for Kwanzaa? I think it's a good idea that it was cut out. Not because it is not informative, and it uses its Kwanzaa time, which is like the, like, you know how, like, dreidel, like, the, it's,
yeah,
the, it's like comparable, but it was clearly white folks talking about Kwanzaa, and sure. I was like, oh, we made a good decision in the 90s when we cut that out. After we, like, I understand why they put it in. I understand they were trying to,
they were doing their 90s best.
Yes, but also I was like, I see why this has been taken out, because Shadow is a white person.
Yeah. Was that in episode 2?
No, it's in episode 1 in cutout.
Okay. Because I was like, that would be interesting if they had, like, two shadow things in episode 2 and they only showed one. Mm-hmm. But no, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And also that makes sense to me of, like, because in episode 2, when they did the one for Hanukkah, I was like, this feels like it just kind of came out of nowhere. Like,
it has a paired scene in the first episode that just is not there. And I actually, I was like, I see what you tried to do. I understand in the 90s that you would think this was a good idea. And I understand.
I did also enjoy the way that they phrased this for the Santa Hog scene. Again, people with children listening, maybe with caution at this point, how at the mall, it was not going to be Santa, but it was going to be one of Santa's helpers.
Yes. Santa Hog.
To one, keep all the humans out. Because this show, I'm pretty sure that there were no real humans in this show. Like human Muppets.
Sure.
I think it was all animals. But also, because that's a very smart way of dealing with that whole situation in real life. Of like, why are there four different Santas that we went and saw? It's like, well, Santa is pretty busy, right?
Right.
So he's got to have his helpers doing this kind of thing.
Now, Kellen, I do have an important question for you. If you were at the Woodland Valley Mall, what is the stop you make before you go see Santa Hog?
Oh my god, I wanted to write down the store names, and I don't know if I got any of them, actually. No! No, I didn't. Do you have a list of the names?
I don't know. I was just making this up. Like, where would you go?
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, okay, here. On the Muppet Wiki page. It is only seen in the Christmas special. Little is known about the Woodland Valley Mall. However, a sign seen during the That's All I Want for Christmas song gives one of the store names as Bass and Robin Ice Cream Parlor.
I would definitely go to Bass and Robin Ice Cream Parlor.
That is exactly where I would stop, is the Bass and Robin Ice Cream Parlor. But also, maybe it's just me, but Baskin Robbins as an ice cream chain has a very like 90s, early 2000s
vibe to
thing
it
for me. Yeah. Maybe that's just because like when I went most often, but like that's like a primo joke.
Sure.
I think today would probably be something having to do with Cold Stone Creamery or something. Maybe that's 2010s, but a Jenny's. It would have to do with Jenny's ice cream, I think, today.
Except for, I mean, they would still have to, I don't know, I would argue that they would still try and make a Muppet pun, and so they would find an ice cream chain big enough where they could still make a Muppet pun.
Yeah.
So it might be bad, and honestly, you want, in my home in LA, the closest ice cream place is a Baskin Robbins.
A Baskin Robbins. I had, like, a couple of little notes of just, like, that opening number in the second episode, like, I love a medley, and, like, Oh Come All Ye Otters, and of course they put the emphasis on five golden rings, like they do in the John Denver and the Muppets Christmas. Like, I just like these little touches of things that carry through the Hensonverse.
The Hensonverse? The
Muppet Cinematic Universe? The HCU, the Henson Cinematic Universe? The other thing that, like, flew me back in memory is the Where Is Shadow song, because I think that's how they find her in every episode, is they sing that little...
I really love Shadow. I love that it offers a different form of puppetry, right? Like, I was like, oh, we're doing something really interesting here. We're, like, we're meta-puppeting. We're, like, puppet-on-puppet.
One of the Muppet Show things that we talked about also did a shadow puppetry. Like, they have a very cool interest in shadow puppetry. And I think that's a thing of, like, this isn't just an entertainment company. Like, they're genuinely interested in puppetry and the mechanics of puppetry. Like, to go back to Dave Goals, like, he got a job with the Muppet Studios because he was like, look at these cool Muppets I built. These cool puppets I built. And they were like, oh, wow. And he, like, got, like, a 6-month position, and then he got a full-time job. And when he has been Gonzo since the beginning. Well, like, at the start of it, he said, like, Gonzo was, like, a very down-in-the-mouth kind of guy. Like, he didn't have the, like, great Gonzo thing for a long time, and that kind of developed as Dave developed as a puppeteer, because he had the ye olde imposter syndrome with being there, because he was, like, a computer engineer or something. He worked for Hewlett-Packard, and then by chance ended up meeting Frank Oz at like a puppet convention, because he like watched Sesame Street and was like, this shit is cool, and like went to a convention, met Frank Oz, and was like, can I come to the Sesame Street set? And they were like, yeah. And he did, and then he like kind of fell into it. But he said that like Gonzo was this really down in the mouth guy, but he wanted to bring some optimism and some like more fun to it, and he asked, can I take Gonzo and try and make a puppet that has eyes that can move back and forth so he doesn't look so sad all the time? So like he went for like a there's like a puppet mechanic thing that's central to how Dave Goals started as a puppet artist with the Muppets, and now he's like one of the top performers for them.
I love it. I also, I mean, everything in part two kind of happens quickly, right? But, like, we get the traditions, we get the, like, tiny little shoe for Tutter, we get all of that that we've already talked about. And then we get the hunt for the winter berry.
The hunt for the winter berry was so sweet.
It's so sweet. I love this, like, we've shown everyone else having a moment, and then it becomes Bear's moment.
Like, he waited his turn.
Yes.
He's a very good parental figure.
Yes!
Even if he's not technically their parent, he's a very good parental figure for a television show. And I also like this scene having to do with Jack, and, like, the way that they handle Jack's character, because I think something that is hard for many people, not just children, but many people understand, is that, like, you can offer help to people that seem to need it, and they will not always take you up on it. Even if, like, it's, quote, in their best interest, like, you can move in with us, like, you can live with us. And Jack was like, no, I think I gotta, like, even if to the rest of the characters, it was like, well, it's obvious, like, why wouldn't he want to live in our house with us? But Jack has his own life and, like, his own mind and his own understanding of things. And eventually they found a solution, you know, like, there was the doghouse on Hog's property and he moved in.
But it also allows him to live by himself and have that
independence.
Yes.
And even, like, as a way of just, like, very specifically with unhoused populations, a lot of them are not going to want every solution that's offered in front of them, and that's okay. Like, they don't have to take a solution just because it's there. But I think, like, I was just kind of struck by that they didn't write a character that was like, oh, thank you, of course I'll move in. Like, this is great, because that's not how it works.
Right.
In all kinds of ways. Like, when you offer help to people, they don't always take you up on it, even if you think they have to. I just, like, I really appreciated this. I think this is a really great special, and I'm glad that this show is on Disney Plus now.
I absolutely concur. I will say the only other thing I want to add is that the external shots of the house remind me so much of Emmett Otter.
Yes! So
the, like,
much.
Style of Emmett Otter, yes. I do. I love Best Present Ever. I love the Return of Winterberry. I love Doc Hogg coming in and saving the day, quote unquote, right?
Fulfilling the Winterberry wish, we could say.
Yes, fulfilling the Winterberry wish. And then I love the little Luna moment at the end.
They always, to my memory, they always end the episode with a little chat with Luna.
Sure.
Which is just great. It's a great way to wrap up everything of, like, this is the things we learned today.
I can't wait to watch more of this with you.
Yes.
It's such a delight. It's very sweet.
And I'm glad that, like, little other kids will get to watch this now, because I don't know if they still do Playhouse Disney the way that they did, like, when I was a kid and other things like that. But I think it's a fun show, and I think it's really sweet in a way that,
yes,
like, little kids' shows aren't as sweet.
Yes.
To my knowledge, as they used to be. Like, they're still fun and, like, kid-centric and made for kids and all that junk, but, like, this is just a really sweet little show.
It's sweet, it's kind, I really like it, I'm excited to watch more of it. I can see how this was something you loved as a child, knowing you as an adult.
It's right up my alley.
Yeah, I love it. We should tell the people, I know we had said we were going to do Muppets Take Manhattan, and we are. We're just going to do some Christmas stuff first.
Yeah, that'll probably be after the new year is what we're aiming for.
Yeah.
Like we did with the original Muppets movie. That was like a new year kind of movie. Not the original Muppets movie, the 2011 one.
Yes.
But yeah, so expect a little bit more holiday stuff from us coming soon. We won't tell you exactly what yet. It'll be a surprise.
A surprise. All right. Well, thank you for joining us. And Kellen, where can people find us?
We are old friends who just met with Hoove on Instagram. I always feel like I need to specify that. And you can email us at oldfriendswhojustmetpod@gmail.com. And, you know, just have a great day.
Have a great day. All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.